I'm your host this morning, Richard Rutledge, and I thank you for joining us today. Well, today we are going to continue our study through the New Testament. We are going to be in Revelation chapter 13 in just a bit. Hopefully you've been able to keep up, as we have made it our goal this year to completely study through the New Testament in 2016. If you've gotten behind, remember that you can go to the on-demand section, find the Mornings for the Master icon. From there, find those chapters you may have missed and catch back up. We'll be here when you get back. This morning, I said, we will turn our attention to Revelation 13. So if you want to be getting your Bibles ready and heading over to those chapters, we'll begin that study momentarily. We don't have much on the bulletin board this morning at all, really. Maybe you know of something that's going on. We would love for you to share it with us. Just shoot us an email at mornings@tgrn.org, and we'll do our best to get it out in a timely manner so the folks will be aware of the events that are going on in your area, and that way we will be aware of it as well. Only thing I want to put in your mind to get you thinking about, and we'll give you more information as the date approaches, but that first weekend in February, we have the Make Me a Servant workshop here in Mount Vernon. We'll be hosting that, and we're looking forward to that event this year, as we have in the past. Hope that you can make plans to be with us, but if you cannot make it here to Mount Vernon, we'll broadcast that event live here on the network as well, so that you can participate in that way. But that's about it as far as the bulletin board that we have this morning. Nothing's going on this time of the year. Things sort of slow down as we end the year and get ready for our new. And so that's, with that being said, we're just going to take a brief break before we kick things off. And we'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us. Morning and welcome back to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network this Monday morning as we continue our study through the New Testament. Today, Revelation chapter 13. Hope you have your Bibles handy as we begin this study this morning. We continue this thought that was mentioned last chapter. You know, we've seen that this battle continues and it's going to continue on. Here we're going to see the two beasts that rise, and these two beasts, one from the sea, one from the land, and we're going to divide this chapter up by those individual topics. So we'll take these first 10 verses, as we're going to note the sea beast here in the first 10. Then we'll look at the beast of the earth through the remainder of this chapter. So let's just read those together. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth was like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all of the world marveled and followed the beast. And so they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. And then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his temple, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given to him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Let's just pause there. Now let's go back and take a look at this beast that is mentioned here in these first 10 verses, the beast that has risen out of the sea. We have this description of this beast here in the very beginning as he tells us, I stood there and observed this beast coming out of the sea. And this beast that is rising up has this vision of strength and tenacity and ferocity, even in verse number 2. But notice some things that he says, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his head the blasphemous name. It's a lot like what we see even in Daniel chapter 7. In Daniel 7, verses 2 and 3, it says, Daniel spake and said, "And I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the 4 winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea, and 4 great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another." These visions that are being seen. In chapter 17, we're going to note what John will also reveal in verses 1 and verse number 15, where there is this coming up out of the sea. "And there came one of the 7 angels, which had the 7 vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, and I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters." In verse 15, he will say, he said unto me, "The waters which you saw where the whore sits are people and multitudes and nations and tongues." And so here we're seeing this beast rise up. And as we see it depicted here, the idea of the many Roman nation that we would see here in the belief of it, because it's not just the idea liking it to the things going on in the Judean realm, but it's larger than that. It's greater than just what's going on in Jerusalem. And it fits then with the widespread and universal role that Rome would play when we see this beast. Again, it's the imagery that is designed here for us. It's given in visions, not just stating, well, this is Domitian and this is Nero. It's not talking about in those manners, but we're seeing it in a representation of the governmental realm with this sea beast. And when we look at it and how widespread it was, because it says in verse number 3, it's interesting, he sees this head. Now, one of the heads seemed to have died. It seemed to have had a mortal wound, but this mortal wound was healed. And the idea that it fits even with what was happening with the time of Nero. Nero, remember, was a great persecutor of the church and of Christianity. And he did so on a wide scale, even within Rome itself. Remember, he sets fire to Rome, and then he blames the Christians for this fire. He was known to be an individual who would even have great parties where he would have Christians as basically tiki torches for his parties. He was a great persecutor. But then his suicide came. And so there was this, seemed to be a death blow. But then right behind him, Domitian comes along. And Domitian even accelerates this persecution. So it seemed to be this mortal wound there. But this mortal wound was healed. And Domitian would take over. And this idea of emperor worship would then even grow during Domitian's time and have this as well. And so we see this speaking of where it says, so they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast. So now, whatever this beast is, he is serving and has gained his power from the dragon. And, you know, we go back to chapter 12, and we see that this dragon, the great dragon, was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So we see in chapter 12 and verse 9, this great dragon who is giving this power to this sea beast is none other than Satan. And so it is emissary for him, a workman for him. You know, he doesn't have power over us as far as doing things in the supernatural way, but the idea that he is using his ministers of darkness, man, and he's using the authorities of this time. He has given authority to this beast of the sea that is represented here with the seven heads and the 10 horns and the 10 crowns upon those horns. And we could even go through, and some would try to place them with which ruler of the time that would be there, who would then fall into place, who would they each represent. Well, I mean, we could go through and probably draw some things out, but even that would be speculation. So we look then with this. They worshiped the dragon, and when they worship the dragon, they're worshiping the beast who gave the authority, they worshiped also the beast who this authority was given to, and we see the emperor worship that would take place. And so anyone who is bowing down to Nero, bowing down to Domitian, bowing down to the emperors, as they would try to force Christians to do, to try to recant their faithfulness to Christ and to God, they would also in turn be worshiping the beast himself, or the dragon himself, because they say, who is like this beast? Who's able to make war like him? He is the one who has this authority in this period of time, and he was able to do these things. But we also see, as we continue reading, it says that there was given unto him a mouth speaking these great blasphemies. He was speaking out against God. Remember Christ, when he was tempted, Satan comes to him and tells him that power over this world had been given to him, and he had this authority and power. Jesus has also, even in John chapter 16 and verse 11, he referred to Satan as the prince of this world. And so here is that power that was given unto him to continue this 42 months. It is a temporary power, but he has this power. And he is the one who is blaspheming, notice what it says, against the name of God, verse number 6, the name of God that was holy, the name of God that was even in the Decalogue in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 7, was not to be used in vain, or as Jesus would even teach in that model prayer in Matthew chapter 6, that hallowed be thy name. And so he was blaspheming the name of God. He was blaspheming the tabernacle, and he was blaspheming them that dwell in heaven. And so it is this retaliation and battle against all that is right. Verse 7, he goes on, and it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. He has given this beast this power, and the Roman Empire and the Roman emperors exercised this power. Again, Nero, he sort of did all of this within Rome. There was this great persecution of Christians within Rome itself. But then when Domitian came along, it went out throughout his reign and regions. It was no longer restricted there. It was on a much greater and wider scale. But he was only able to overcome those who would deny, who would turn away. Notice what it says. All who dwell upon the earth, verse 8, shall worship him. All of those who, all the worldly, all those who are not living in accordance with God's will, all of those who, as we see earlier, those who kept not the commandments of God are those who are of the world. And so he points this out once again. If you look, let's see, for verse number 8, all who dwell on the earth will worship him. Well, those are the ones who have not kept his commandments. But then he says, not only those who dwell upon the earth, but those whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. The book of life, we see Jesus spoke about to his disciples about those names written in heaven. We know from what Paul states over in Philippians chapter 4, you know, that there are those whose names are in the book of life, he would say, when he's talking about entreat those true yoke fellows, beseeching Euodius and Synecdoche to make things right. These are people whose names are registered there. We already noted in Revelation chapter 3, in verse number 5, when he spoke of those at Sardis, he said, I will not blot out his name out of the book of life. And we also will see, Lord willing, when our study continues, when we get to Revelation chapter 20, when he says, I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. He said, there are those who would not bow down, who did not worship, because they were the ones whose names are written in the Lamb's book of life. Those who will follow God faithfully, those who will not bow down and worship the emperor, and they would have their name in that registry. He goes on, and with that, he tells them, listen up. If any man has ears to hear, let him hear. Why? Because there will be, verse number 10, a law of sowing and reaping that will come into play. He says here that he that leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills by the sword will perish by the sword. This is exactly what Jesus had told Peter when he picked up the sword in Matthew chapter 26 and verse number 52. He told him there to put away your sword. Why? Because if you're going to live by it, you're going to perish by it. Paul said that there were those who sowed and they will reap. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 18. For many walk, of whom I've told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is their shame, who mind earthly things. Those that he's speaking of, those who are persecuting, those who are slaying the faithful of God, will in turn reap the consequences. God is not mocked, Paul would say. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. For he that sows to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap everlasting life. So we see this reaping and sowing. Good point, Chris, with the Isaiah 5:20 passage when he says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. There were many who were doing that during that period of time. There would be many who would fall down before him. All that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written. So it's not, you know, don't get the idea that the world bows down to him, but there were a majority in the world, just as Jesus would say about entering into that straight and difficult path that leads to everlasting life. There were going to be few that find it, but many would go down that wide and easy path that leads to destruction. He goes on as well in Matthew chapter 7, and he says, "Not in that day, many will say unto me, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, done many wonderful works in thy name? And that one, what will he say? But depart from me, I never knew you, you workers of iniquity." There are going to be those who are religious folks who have not worshiped the Lamb in the way that they should, but instead they have worshiped their own desires and their own lusts of this world, and they have bowed down. And so he says that these individuals will face those consequences. But now the attention turns as he moves along. There's the sea beast, and the sea beast is almost universally understood that he's speaking of the Roman government with the reign of emperors and the emperor worship that carried out and the persecution that was carried out by the emperors of Rome during this time period. But then we get to chapter 13, verse 11 and through the end, and we see this beast that's coming from the earth. And you know, there are varied thoughts on this when we look at this event. But what we can see for certain is the things spewing from the mouth of this beast are things of a false doctrine. Now, let's notice what it says in verses 11 and following. Then I saw another beast come up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercised all the authority of the first beast in his presence and caused the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He performed great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell upon the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who is wounded by the sword and lived. And he granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause many as would not to worship the image of the beast to be killed. He caused all, both great, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. All right, let's go back and look at some of these things now. Let's pick up there in verse 11. When he saw this other beast that came up out of the earth. And when we look at this one, this beast, he looks more innocent than the previous. When we look at the original sea beast, I mean, this one has the seven heads and the 10 horns and 10 crowns, and he's like a leopard and a lion and a bear. And here, this one is like a lamb that speaks like a dragon. And so this beast that we are viewing here is a beast that a false prophet, one who appears one way and speaks yet another way. Well, I mean, we can see that easily with the idea that, you know, Satan's ministers are even transformed as a minister of light. We see so much about the false prophets even here in the book of Revelation. If we continue, we get to chapter 16 and verse 13. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet. In chapter 19 and verse 20, and the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. And chapter 20, verse 10, and the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophets are and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. So we see that there are the beast that is cast in there, the one who has deceived those who had received the mark in order to worship him. And so we see these false prophets. And so we have these ones, it says, that appear to be, has the two horns like the lamb, but he speaks like the dragon, and he exercises all authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell upon it to worship the first beast who has had the deadly wound. Now, you know, there are those with this idea that are going to tie in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And with it, you know, there's that passage that talks about there, this great falling away that would take place. He says in chapter 2 that this great falling away, verse number 3, let nobody deceive you by any means, that the day of the Lord shall not come until there come a falling away of the first, that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And many talk about the idea of this then is, well, 2 Thessalonians 2, representing the papal church, the pope, and therefore this beast here also then the beast of the earth representing papal Rome, the pope. But Brother Taylor makes a good Brother Taylor makes a good argument in his commentary on this, and that is that whatever this beast is, this beast of the earth, he is supporting and encouraging the worship of the first beast, the beast of the sea. And if the beast of the sea is representative of Rome and the worship of those emperors, then that would not fall in line with the Roman Catholic Church, nor would the timeline fit in place. Because, I mean, we're 600 AD, when the Catholicism springs on the scene, but this is something that is there at the very time with this emperor worship taking place. And so, if we consider that, then what do we have here but something, some false teaching, some individuals encouraging the continued worship of the Roman emperors. And so this emperor worship that was going on here. Now, he said he performs great signs, verse 13, so that even he makes fire come from heaven in the sight of men. He is doing this. Well, Mark 13, verse 22, for false Christ and false prophets shall arise and shall show signs and wonders to seduce, and if it were possible, even the elect, Jesus would say. If we go again to 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 9, even him who's coming after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, there were going to be deceivers that would come about. And here there is this deceiver, and he is deceiving those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was able to do. And so he is leading many astray. But then there's also, if we keep reading, he granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause those who cause as many as not would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Paul would even mention, make reference to this in the book of Philippians, the idea of needing to fall before the emperor. He said, I'm ready to be this drink offering, ready to be poured out, a libation. And oftentimes that's what they would do. A Christian would have to denounce Christ in order to prove that he is denouncing Christ, forced to make an offering to the man-made deity of the emperor. And oftentimes all they had to do was pour out a drink offering, a libation, a cup of wine that they would take and pour out. And in that act, it would be an act of worship towards the emperor. And so those who would not worship the image would be killed. He causes both the small and the great and the rich and the poor and the free and the slave to receive a mark. And a mark would be upon their right hand and or on their foreheads. And whatever this mark is, whatever it was it a identity card, ration cards back in the day of war? You know, you couldn't buy certain things without your ration card, things of that nature. And those who would not and did not have this mark, well, they couldn't buy. And so verse 17 explains about this mark, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. So he gives the understanding about the purpose of this mark. It was to affect revenue and commerce. Today we think of it like a trade embargo. You know, there are sanctions, economic sanctions that have been placed over terroristic nations where, you know, we do not allow trade and commerce to go between these. Well, if an individual was faithful to God and not worshiping the emperor, he would be restricted from that which he could have and do commerce with. So he mentions this even here. That's what the purpose of this mark is for. And it affected everyone. There was the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the slave and the free. Everyone had to have the mark in order to perform this business. But then we get to that final verse, that one where maybe, as some have said, the most misunderstood verse in all of the book of Revelation, and all the verses that are there, this one with the 666, the mark of the beast. And with it, I mean, so many individuals and people have been cited as being, oh, this is the beast that is spoken of in 666 with the 666. People said it was Hitler. People said it was Saddam Hussein. People said it was, you know, you could name when all of, you know, when wars and rumors of war and all these things that people are thinking the end is near, they're looking at this individual and the Antichrist and the beast and all of these things that are out there that are twisted around in this book. But when we understand the Bible in general in its numerology, and the book of Revelation especially uses great numerology, and that is that the number seven is that seven which is the perfect and complete. And then if we take and we triple that number, that means that perfection is complete upon the highest. And so 777, representative of the perfect completion. The Holy Spirit, even the seven sevens, the seven spirits in Revelation, there in chapter 1, verse number 4, that idea of doubling and then adding. So the seven sevens, even the representing that. Well, the number six is suggestive of man because he says that this is, this number that he's speaking of, here is wisdom. Let him who understands calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. It is a number of a man. And so we have this six suggesting of man. It's one less than seven. It is imperfection. It is less than perfection. And if we were to even magnify that evil, what do we do? Well, the multiplying of it, the tripling of it, as it is with the tripling of the seven, the tripling of the six. And whoever it's speaking of, it is representative of an individual and of necessity even being an individual who is known to these individuals during this time period, during the time when John's writing. If it's representative of a person today to come, where would the need be to even symbolize his name with the triple six instead of just naming the individual? The people then in that era, in that time, would understand what John was writing about. So it wasn't one to come, but it was the one who was there and dealing with all of these things at the time. Because this battle that was raging on between the dragon and now his two minions, if you will, the beast of the sea, representing even the Roman government, and the beast of the earth, representing religion, but more specifically, you know, it's not the idea necessarily of that first apostasy with the Pope, but it is more a supportive role where there is the emperor worship. Again, the beast of the land is encouraging the worship of the beast of the sea. So they are counterparts working together with the authority that has been given to them by the dragon to cause individuals to worship the beast and in turn worship the dragon. But the faithful will not do so. The faithful will remain because their names are written in the book of life, and those who would not worship will be killed. Be faithful. That's where we go back to chapter 2. And remember what he said in Revelation chapter 2 and in verse number 10, that there is this need to remain faithful. Fear none of these things which you shall suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that you may be tried, and you will have tribulation 10 days. But be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. Whatever they were to endure, it was going to be of a temporary nature. Back to the 42 days in this chapter, 10 days here. It is a temporary time, but be faithful unto death, even as Antipas was. Remember chapter 2? Drop down just a few verses after that as he addresses the church there in Pergamos. And he says in verse number 13, I know your works, and where you dwell, even where Satan's seat is, and you hold fast my name, and have not denied my faith, even in those days when Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you where Satan dwells. He is calling for and reminding them, be faithful. Be faithful even in this great persecution from the beast of the sea and from the beast of the earth. Well, Chris made a comment. He says the dragon and his two beasts are fighting the battle that has already been lost to the mighty Lamb of God. And that's the whole message, Chris, of the book of Revelation. And that is that, you know, yes, those who overcome can come over, but the victory has already been won. It's like, you know, picking your team, the team that you want to be on, and you already know who wins, and you want to be on a winning team. Well, be on the side of the Lamb. Be faithful, completely faithful through all of it, and the crown will be yours because the victory has already been won. It just has to play completely out. And here he shows that even in the face of these things, there were those who would remain faithful. Well, kind of, we still have a bit of time left, but chapter 13 is complete this morning. Appreciate you being with us today and hope that you will continue listening throughout the day. Don't forget, the good news today with Jim Dearman will be on here in just a bit. Always does a great job with that, followed by Reflections Upon the Precious Book Divine with Rick Popejoy. Ryan will do chapter 14 tomorrow. He'll continue this study with at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. Don't forget to tune in for that. But I hope that you're checking your schedule on a regular basis. Try out a new program this week. Maybe you haven't been listening to some of the others. Just, you know, find one that you haven't listened to and start on it. I know that you'll enjoy it because these gentlemen are doing a great job producing great programs, and you have so many listening opportunities. Hope that you'll continue to do so and be with us next time. Until then, we hope that you have a great and a blessed day.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.